Our subject today, privacy, controversy, and television. Your host on The Open Mind is Richard D. Hefner, author and historian.
It seems to me that a very great deal has been said in recent weeks and recent months about the role of privacy and the role of controversy on television. Certainly, I note that when we do here on The Open Mind a program that's particularly heated and controversial, we get a very important press, sometimes good, sometimes bad, but at least we get a press. Possibly it is the press, and possibly it is the critics who are responsible for the presence at times of a kind of controversy that is at times deplored. I don't know. Let's examine this question today. Let's talk now about privacy, controversy, and television. My three guests are selected in terms of their interest in this question. First, two critics, Miss Maria Manis, who is a staff writer for The Reporter magazine, television critic. Secondly, Mr. Gilbert Seldes, author of one of the most important books on the public arts in America, The Seven Lively Arts, television critic for the Saturday Review. And last, Mr. Chet Huntley, the NBC news commentator. Suppose we go right to this question, and suppose I start off with you, Miss Manis, and say that, again, you critics have been harsh or kind to people who have been invading privacy or stimulating controversy variously as you see fit. And let me ask you what you think about this whole business of privacy and television. You've written recently about the invasion of privacy in one particular area, and what generally are your thoughts on the matter?
Well, I may be reversing myself, but I believe that anyone who goes voluntarily to a television studio to be interviewed abandons some of his privacy right there. I do think that certain questions are designed to invade privacy, but then they need not be answered. All you need say is, I think this is an invasion of privacy, which most people don't do, which brings me to my third belief, and that is that we don't really, as Americans, want to be private. There is a terrific compulsion to tell all, and that is why I think that so much is told. I don't think we want to be private.
Do you think, mean then, that if there is frequently a premium placed upon the invasion of privacy on the air, this is just a reflection of American attitudes?
I think it's a reflection of us as Americans. Probably unique. I don't think other countries are like that, are they?
I wouldn't know.
Mr. Seldes?
I wouldn't know.
Mr. Seldes, do you think there is an inordinate invasion of privacy on the air?
No, I don't. No, I don't, because you can only invade privacy. In practice, you do only invade the privacy of someone who has done something important or has had something important happen to them. And you're not going to invade the privacy of Mr. X, who has done nothing at all, because it's not going to be worth your while. Therefore, the X's are out, but Mr. A and Mr. B and Mr. C, notable either for a crime or for wealth or for social position or something, they're the people whose privacy, as a matter of form, becomes public. I don't think you can talk about invasion of privacy. I think that, but I'll give you, if I can take an imaginary case, which I've carefully worked out, giving you all the benefit of the doubt. A person is involved in a crime. A distant cousin of his in a distant city with a totally different name gets mentioned in the papers. As a result, this young person, who is a young woman, has her engagement broken to the son of a very prim but very notable, very rich family. Now, I will defend the right of the newspaper or of the television studio to bring this girl's name and face before the public.
In other words, on a news gathering basis, you say anything that's news, television can do. Mr. Huntley, do you go along with that?
Well, I would say that there is an invasion of privacy, but I think it's by invitation. I don't think the initial blame rests with us who are in search of information. If you don't want your privacy invaded, you always have the right to say this is none of your business. Now, this area is closed.
How about my young girl who's done nothing? Would you say that's an invasion of her privacy to print her name because a distant cousin of hers was involved in a crime?
I should think it might be an invasion of privacy if she said, "Now, just a minute, this is none of your business. Please go away." And then we worked around somehow and cheated.
I would justify you in cheating because she was engaged to the son of a very notable family. They have already abdicated all rights to privacy by being notable.
Well, that's a fine commentary, Mr. Huntley. Do you accept that?
I can't agree entirely that just being notable serves as an invitation for the invasion of your privacy. I don't care how notable you are. The President of the United States, for example, should reserve some areas of his life and some areas of his daily routine for strictly his own business. And I don't think it's the business of the American people to know everything there is to know about the President of the United States.
Well, going back to this question of news gathering, on your own news program, you feel that you have asked each person who appears, like it or not, whether news about his life should be made public?
No, I don't think we always ask every question that might be asked. I think some of us have a little better manners than that. But nevertheless, I do think there is an open season, and I don't believe we could be condemned too greatly if we should ask those impolite questions. It is up to the interviewee to finally draw the line and say, look, this is none of your business.
No, just a second. I think now we're talking about the interviewer and the interviewee, but
yes.
let's limit ourselves for a moment to news reporting and news gathering on television.
All right.
Now, you can gather a story and report it without the consent of the person whose life you are unfolding.
Oh, indeed.
Is this acceptable?
Oh, certainly.
You are
bound by the rules or the laws of libel and slander.
But you brought on good manners, too. And I think that a newspaper reporter has no right to good manners. He's got a job to report.
Well, I have a suspicion. Mr. Huntley just said, bound by the laws of libel, etc. I had a feeling Miss Manners was going to bring up the question of good manners and morality.
Yes. There is an area where they coincide. But I was thinking, Ben, of, let's say, a television exploration, a documentary of a Negro family down south to point out certain aspects of segregation. Certainly, it happened in a national magazine that after this was done, the life of these people became quite unbearable. They were so exposed and so public that they could go nowhere without a notice and very often antagonism, so that they were ultimately forced to move. Now, I think this can happen. I think this is very near the invasion of privacy because these people have not asked for it. They have been used as subjects of a news documentary. What do you think of that, Mr. Huntley?
Well, I think those unfortunate things are always going to happen. You might take another case of a man unjustly accused of something and brought into a courtroom.
Yes.
He is innocent and finally is proved to be innocent, but nevertheless, he has certainly lost a great deal of his privacy in the process of the trial. The members of his family become well known, his children become well known in the neighborhood. All the time he's been completely innocent. That is one of the unfortunate things that does happen in our system of jurisprudence in our society.
Well, then,
but I don't see how we can resolve it and set up very definite rules of behavior, and certainly you can't legislate.
You do in England to a certain extent. Nothing is published about a trial, about an accused man until the trial begins. But then every word of the trial is publishable.
Well, I note now that the argument runs, as a matter of fact, I think there's been talk about the papers and publications rather than television. And the argument up to this point, in terms of news gathering, runs just as our discussion of privacy and the press did some weeks ago. But suppose we leave the area of news gathering and go to the question of the interview, which has become such a prominent part of American television. What about the invasion, voluntary or otherwise, of our privacy here? Ms. Manners, how do you feel about this?
Well, it must always be voluntary. As I said before, any man or woman who goes to a television studio and sits there to be interviewed must know that questions will be asked him or her. Now, some of these questions may be in very poor taste, and very often they are. They need not be answered, and I'm always amazed when somebody who is on the hot seat or is at something which I consider an invasion, instead of saying politely, this is none of your business, and it's an area which I don't wish to talk about, they tell. This is, to me, quite amazing.
But haven't they committed themselves to telling by going on the program?
Not telling all, no. They certainly must hold in reserve some portions of their lives, or at least they should.
There are certain things that I wouldn't expect you to tell Mr. Selders on this program just because you're a guest. Although maybe you accept this as a different kind of program from the interview.
It is. The thing for your man who doesn't want, man or woman, doesn't want his privacy invaded is to choose the program on which he goes. There are certain programs that make a point of embarrassing questions. I think they're legitimate because the person has allowed this thing to happen. And I think that anything that adds a little rasp and sharpness to television is all to the good, even at the cost of embarrassing an individual.
You say that adds something, a little excitement to television. This is good.
Not excitement in the superficial sense, but first place, an interview brings out the reality of the person being interviewed. I think that's very important, because too many of our programs are just superficial pictures of where this man lives and how he entertains his guests and so forth. They're travelogues inside a person's home. I think they're deplorable. I give you a phrase that Arthur Schlesinger said. He said that the people running the mass media now have got to the point where it's the bland leading the bland. And anything gets away from that. When Mr. Mike Wallace began to irritate people by the drive, sometimes some people thought it was nasty. He gave a new bit of life to television interviewing, and I think it is a very praiseworthy effort. I'm speaking of his early programs on Night Beat. I haven't seen anything in the last 4 months.
Miss Malice?
Well, I was going to use the word roughage to describe what is so terribly needed on television, which is a bland diet, and which these interviews do provide. But there is another area which I think you probably were going to throw at me ultimately, and that is when somebody is interviewed purely for the sake of sensational prurience, like, let us say, a private detective working on the confidential case, or, let's say, a strip teaser or something. This is done not to stir controversy, not to stir excitement, but to appeal to the peeping Tom instinct in human beings. And that, I think, is an exploitation.
Well, why do you say not to stir excitement? That's why I picked up what Mr. Sellers said, because I had the feeling that it was the excitement and that kind of roughage.
I mean the excitement of the mind,
yes,
and not the excitement of the sense.
Intellectual excitement. This is the difference. What I'm talking about is, it's very hard to say the word on television, but it is an excitement of the senses, and not very good senses.
Mm-hmm.
All right, I'm defending the peeping Tom instinct in the human frame. I go that far. I think I'm defending the satisfaction of sheer curiosity.
In terms of the senses
I think that eventually it will move in to the areas you want it to move in. I think the mind can be excited by getting to the senses first. You satisfy the nasty little curiosity we all have. How does so-and-so live? Or what is his secret? What is the skeleton in the cupboard? You satisfy that, and then you learn something about human beings which is valuable and which television doesn't have enough of.
You mean first you lower your sights so that you can raise them?
All right, yes.
You really mean that?
I'm devil's advocate. I tell you, I will take any position you force me into in order to keep one point going, namely that we must not become polite, and we must keep alive as much of the instinct of curiosity as we possibly can.
What's the matter with politeness?
It's deadly for a medium. Look, Mr. Hunter, can you be polite in dealing with a controversial subject on the air if you yourself are taking part in the controversy?
I can't be too polite.
You can't be too polite.
No, that's right. I've got to be a little bit nasty sometimes, I suppose.
Yeah.
You wouldn't really use that word, because I've never seen you be nasty.
Yes, but you can ask a question which I'm sure the interviewee would prefer you.
Mr. Hunter is subtle when he has to be nasty. I'm not opposed to that.
Well, look, along these lines, I'm very interested to note, I referred at the beginning of the program to the fact that when this program gets heated, it gets suppressed. So when we did a program a few weeks ago on television and children, some things were said that were quite controversial, and we did get that press in Variety, where they were very, very nice to the open mind about the same program. There was another review in which they said, instead of going after the type of question uniquely concerned with the person who was being interviewed, questions which could be both interesting and embarrassing, the interviewer did something else. Now, there seemed to be a premium here placed upon questions that were, and the two things were put together, interesting and embarrassing. Do you feel this way, Mr. Sellers? It seems to me you're expressing this point of view.
I feel that way. I think that it's a lower instinct to want to embarrass somebody else. I think that television as a medium should not go out of its way to avoid embarrassing the people that appear before it. It is not television's business. I said before that a reporter has no room for politeness and good manners. The television camera has no room for that if it has a public duty to perform. When the public duty is of very low order, then you can be polite.
Well, to use the word embarrassing in the sense is to make uncomfortable. I wish we could make people uncomfortable in more than just an interview or a controversy on Sunday, which is apparently the only day when people are permitted to think. I think that there should be uncomfortable and embarrassing plays. I don't mean in bad taste, but plays that handle something, whether it's love, marriage, or death, in a disturbing and unpopular and upsetting way. If we get that adult, then I will be very happy. But why should it just be, as I say, confined to Sundays and to talk?
Mr. Hartley, I'm sorry.
You want me to answer that one?
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
You know the answer.
No, not entirely. But after all, time is the most precious thing that, if you're speaking of television, I presume you are.
I am.
Time is the most precious thing that television networks have, and it's that one block of time, namely from about 6 to 10:30 p.m. at night, which is even, that's the great commodity which they have for sale and which sustains its operations. Now then, if Sunday afternoon is set aside for controversy and for the exchange of great ideas and for the broadcasting of shows which you might like, Maria, I think that's not too wrong, because after all, it is being made available, and the public, if it likes that kind of material, if it likes those broadcasts, certainly can make some little effort to get to a television set on Sunday after. Does it have to be placed right in the lap of the audience?
No, Mr. Pemper, if you're going to have 6 to 10, six nights a week, deadening the public appetite for anything like these Sunday afternoon programs, how do you think they're going to survive?
Well, I assure you that I would love to have or be on a great program, let's say from 10:30 to 11 o'clock at night. But nevertheless, I'm on Sunday afternoon, and maybe that's just about as good as we can get right now.
All right. Ms. Madison.
Mr. Huntley, what I meant was that you were speaking really only of what are called highbrow intellectual programs, and that Sunday is the only time, of course, available, and therefore, well, my feeling is that it should be administered intravenously. I mean, entertainment can be intelligent, entertainment can be exciting and controversial, but I'm not saying put on The Open Mind at 8 on a Thursday night, although I'm sure that would be very pleasant. I'm saying have a play that has some guts and intelligence to it.
I see.
That's all.
You're not arguing so much with the program director as you are with the script writers.
I am arguing with the people who buy the scripts and determine them and censor them.
Yeah.
Mrs. Ellis? But again, my feeling is, of course, I agree with Ms. Manus about this, that if you're going to have a series of plays which are superficially exciting, like all the westerns, all the mysteries, and so forth, plus a series of domestic comedies, some of which are extremely entertaining, each one individually, to have 50 of them, then the appetite for a controversial play gets deadened. And then you have to make a little Siberia for the intellect, which is Sunday. Now, I'm all for integration in these matters.
Well, Mr. Seldes, that's why I disagreed with you a moment ago when we were discussing the invasion of privacy. In other words, let's put it this way. He who keeps a diary, I should think, takes upon himself a responsibility to see that that diary is kept locked and put away where no one's going to see it. There is in all of us a desire to read other people's diaries. And while it may be unhealthy, it still isn't unnatural.
But do you think if I happen on a diary of a person who in some way is in the public mind, that I ought to suppress this diary?
No, I think all you might do is ask yourself, well, haven't I something a little bit more worthwhile to do, perhaps?
Go read it. Not as a newspaper reporter.
That's right. Other than that, the prime responsibility rests with him who keeps the diary.
This is, to me, a very peculiar point of view. I'm sorry. And it's been taken now by every single guest to whom I've put this question. I hope, Ms. Manus, that you were going to charge off in the other direction.
Well, I was going to say that I place a little bit more responsibility on the reader of the diary than I think Mr. Seldes does. I think the man who stumbles on the diary and opens it might say, now look, what am I going to do with this material? Or isn't there something better I might do to occupy my time? Or this And he might say to himself, this places on me a rather dreadful responsibility, too, perhaps, if I read his book.
I feel that this is important, but I think maybe Mr. Selvis has already taken himself off the hook by saying that if you stimulate, use the word baser desires and interests, then you're going eventually to have stimulated higher forms of interest. But this is, this seems to me to be more a defense of anything that's not bland.
I'm pushed to that position. I regret it, but...
You pushed yourself.
I know. I regret it, but I still think that if we have a choice of two evils, of a courtesy, a thoughtfulness about individuals, a politeness toward them, and on the other side, driving in and getting as much of the reality of existence as we can on the television screen, then I choose the latter at the cost of the former.
Miss Ballas?
Well, I've been burning to tell what I really think is a major invasion of privacy, which is partly voluntary but partly not, and that is people being married on camera in a program on a certain network, which to me is not only the absolute depths of vulgarity, but the depths of invasion when you consider that marriage is possibly the most private moment in the lives of two people. I'm amazed, first of all, that any young couple would do it. I know why they do it. They get a free trousseau, etc. But that the church, and the church does, should allow itself to condone, not only condone this, but to take part in it. I think this shows just about how far we have fallen in the abdication of privacy.
But suppose someone were to answer that possibly, if we were to accept this picture of how far we've fallen, this is partially due to you critics who talk very frequently and write very frequently only about those programs which have stimulated some aspect of the picture of privacy, thoughts about privacy or controversy.
Of course we do.
You don't approve of this program. You don't approve of programs very similar to it. But, again, taking a page out of Mr. Selder's, not his book, but what he said here today, if you approve of anything that isn't the bland leading the bland, don't you in turn lead to this kind of, the worst kind of invasion?
No. Look, Mr. Heppner, we write more about, I speak for Ms. Manus and myself, but actually for the critical fraternity in the newspapers and so on. We write more about a program of yours which has a fight going on than about a program in which people more or less agree.
Why?
Because you have stirred us more. Because on a program which everybody agrees, we begin to approach that blandness and that conformity, which is the bane of all television. So every once in a while, you come up with something, a glaringly burning, controversial subject. Of course, we discuss it.
But now, wait a minute. I let you set up a straw man by you say the fight or nothing whatsoever. And I think that maybe you critics have made us choose between the fight or nothing whatsoever. What about an area of programming where there isn't a knockdown, drag-out fight? Now, today we've exchanged views, and maybe someone's going to say they were really at each other's throats. I would doubt that, but we have exchanged views. We haven't fought. This becomes what? A run-of-the-mill program or one of the important ones?
That is for the other critics. We're two critics here. We have disagreed. And I have deliberately taken extreme positions so I can be forced away from a little bit. But I do disagree with you on one of the fundamentals about, in fact, on each of the two things you talked about, I disagree with you about invasion of privacy to a sufficient degree. I disagree with you, I think, as to the value of controversy. I think that my disagreement with you is proper for your program. I don't know what concept you had of your program when you began it, but I think that without some controversy in your program, you would feel it not worth going on with.
Well, I don't know. I watch Mr. Huntley's program, and frequently there is an expression there of what controversy there is going on in the country. More frequently, there is a very intelligent report, possibly of conflicting points of view, but there is, it seems to me, no premium placed upon this notion of fight itself.
Mr. Huntley said some very valuable things about that before the program, about the lack of debate.
Well, yes, in the area of controversy. Now, are we slipping over into the business of controversy? All right, we're leaving an invasion of privacy alone. There is not enough controversy on radio and television, in my opinion. Everyone's a little afraid of it. You do get into horrible lawsuits. somebody is always coming around demanding equal time for something that's been said about him or some group to which he may belong, and that gets to be a nuisance. If something is said, the network finds itself unable to cope with it sometimes when 15 people rush in and say, I demand equal time to answer Mr. Jones, who said something I didn't approve of. And I think it seems to me that we have a bad set of ground rules for controversy in this country. There has been developed an idea that you don't answer your opposition, you don't refute his points, but rather you set out to destroy him, to wipe him out, to finish him off, polish him off. And where this idea has sprung from, I don't know, and it may be, one reason may be, that we don't involve ourselves enough in high school and college in a rather old-fashioned sport of debate. Now, that was the ground rules for debate are good, and they are old. Anyone who's ever...
The ground rules debate is some respect for the other person's opinion.
That's right.
And if we're losing that, we're in bad shape for democracy.
Okay. Right, sir.
Maybe we are. This is not
a... but I think that what Mr. Huntley is talking about is controversy on a certain level. It is not fight. And what we have seen applauded, I think, very, very much so by you critics, is less the controversy that Mr. Huntley talks about and more the fight, the knockdown, drag-out fight, which then leads to, as you've said, to the invasion of privacy and to bad taste. I take the easy way out. I put it in your laps.
The knockdown fight is terribly exciting, as a prize fight is. It is not the way to engender much light on a subject. I grant you that. But it's a beautiful way to attract people's attention. I think that if all four of us were to engage in acrobatics for a moment, the eye would follow us more, but not necessarily the mind. Now, a certain amount of agility, like dancing, is involved in the prize fight attack in controversy. And I'm for using it up to at least a certain extent. I'm backing down slightly now.
I'd like to research the question of how many people become involved in, shall we say, higher-level programs after watching the boxing on television.
Well,
we could try it now. We could try it now,
madam. Well, it seems to me that if you got two articulate people engaged in debate, observing all the polite ground rules, but nevertheless you have the makings of a fine, interesting, highly provocative program, and I would point to the great debate between Stassen and Governor Dewey in Portland, Oregon. When was it? 1948. I should think that had a tremendous audience.
And I'm going to have to put an end to this program right now. Thank you so much for joining me today.